Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Sabbath. On October 24th, 2005, a notable civil rights figure named Rosa Parks died. A week after that, I gave a sermonette message related to the event that Rosa Parks became known for, parts of which I'll mention again here today. Just out of curiosity, how many of you have heard of or know about Rosa Parks? Oh, even the young people. Okay, good, good. Yeah, in case you don't, it was a little over 70 years ago, on December 1st, 1955, that Rosa Parks refused to move from her seat on a Montgomery, Alabama city bus. It was an incident that had a profound influence on American society. At that time, Alabama's racial segregation laws required black passengers to ride in the back of the buses used for public transportation. The seats in the front or the middle, where Rosa happened to be seated, were reserved for white passengers, but Rosa Parks happened to be black. When she refused to move from her seat, police were called. She was arrested, taken to the city jail, fingerprinted, and later found guilty of violating state law. She was fined $10 plus $4 in court fees, which is the equivalent of about $165 in today's money. But it was just one of the many indignities and trials that were suffered by black people in the South at that time. The case, though, resulted in a lawsuit that reached all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which determined that racial segregation on buses was unconstitutional. Whenever I think of Rosa Parks now, it brings to mind for me some lessons I learned during the Feast of Tabernacles in 1984. In 1984, I attended the Feast of Tabernacles in China with about 500 others, most of whom were American. David Hanaway and a few other people from our local church area were there in attendance as well. We all had a great feast. We saw, we experienced a lot. We learned a lot. We saw the Great Wall, Tiananmen Square, the Imperial Palace, and a host of assortment of other things. Almost every day, we took a bus tour of significance, at least for the purpose of my message today, was the fact that we had to ride on the same bus with the same people and sit in the exact same seats all the time when we took these tours. Apparently, it was easier for our guides and for the communist authorities at that time to keep track of us. As it turned out, my seat was always in the very back of the bus. It wasn't the most comfortable ride. It seemed like in the back it kind of bounced up and down a little bit more than other places in the bus. But I sat next to a Chinese-American named Henry, and conversations with him kept me quite entertained. This is a little bit extraneous, but it's kind of interesting. Henry was single and maybe about 40 years old at the time. And I remember him looking out the windows of the bus as we go through these big cities, just teeming with people. And he was lamenting that there were probably thousands of single Chinese ladies around us, and none of them were in the church. And I remember him saying, someday, he'd say, I want to marry a nice, plump Chinese lady, which I thought was very ironic because Henry was very, very thin. Again, that's kind of extraneous information here. But back to Rosa Parks, and why does an icon from the civil rights movement provoke a memory for me from the feast in China? I'll continue the explanation here. The feast was held in the Jingling Hotel. It was big, it was modern, at that time. It was a high-rise showpiece for Western visitors in Nanjing, China. But as new and as modern as it was, it seemed to have a few deficiencies. Things just weren't built up to American construction standards. Not that we expected it, but some of us, being typical spoiled Americans, were quick to find fault and find things to complain about. One of which was that as big as the hotel was, as many people as it was meant to accommodate, and for as many stories as it had, it was really tall, there were only two very small elevators. So that often, when it stopped at your floor to let you on, it was already packed with people, so packed with people that you couldn't get on yourself. The only stairway in the hotel was almost hidden and not convenient to get to. From one floor, you had to go through some storage area to find it. From another floor, you had to go through what appeared to be part of the hotel's kitchen. Then the stairway itself was extremely steep and narrow, so that if you met somebody coming in the opposite direction, you had to turn sideways in order for the two of you to pass each other. It was very claustrophobic. Even though my room was somewhere, I'm going to say the 11th floor, I'm not sure, but it was way up there, don't remember exactly, I still used the stairs. I could still beat the elevator, since you had to wait so long to get on to use it. But then partway through the feast, we were informed that the stairway was not meant to be used by hotel guests. It was only for service personnel, which could probably explain why it was so hard to find. So it was back to waiting in long lines at the elevator. The problem became acute during meal times. All the meals were served in one big banquet hall on one of the lower floors, and all 500 of us had to show up at the same time. So once you finally got on and off the elevator, you often found yourself at the end of another very long line waiting for people to move through a marginally efficient or inefficient buffet line. The overall result was that people waited in long lines for a long time at mealtime. On one particular day, I got off the elevator at dinner time to find myself standing almost at the end of one of these very long buffet lines. There were only a few people to get off the elevator behind us, so judging by the great number of people in front of us and the very few people behind us, we were definitely going to be nearly the last ones to eat. And I must have been particularly hungry or grumpy that day, because I began mildly complaining to the person next to me in line. I don't even remember who it was. I wasn't really upset. I was just being kind of whiny, being an overindulged, impatient, spoiled American who could find nothing better to do with his time than to engage in a little whiny fault-finding. Griping about this, griping about that, and thinking back on it, I was probably getting a little obnoxious and tiresome to listen to from people around me. But I went on about the elevator, not being able to use the stairs, being at the back of the food line. I even complained that on the tours, I always had to ride in the back of the bus. At which point, there came a voice from right behind me. "And what would you know about riding in the back of a bus?" And I turned around, and there was a tall, elderly, stern-looking black lady. And standing right there next to her was another elderly, stern-looking black lady. I mean, either one of them could have been about at the same age as Rosa Parks at that time. Proverbs 18:7 is fitting here. Actually, I'm not sure that the lady who spoke was all that tall. It was probably more a matter of me suddenly feeling very small and and stupid. I thought, oh great, I've offended these ladies. Proverbs 18:7. A fool's mouth is his own destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. Foolish words can trap a person. I didn't know what to say. I was embarrassed. I was afraid to open my mouth again. Finally, after what for me seemed like a very long, uncomfortable silence, the lady leaned towards her friend. She cracked a slight smile, and she said, "I just love making white boys turn red." And the two of them broke out in laughter. The tension was broken, and although I still felt a little foolish, I was relieved to know that I had not offended them, or at least if I had, they took it very well. I was very thankful for the gentle way in which the lady dealt with me and my whining. You can begin turning to Proverbs 25:11, because it's also very appropriate here. In this situation, yeah, here was a wise elderly black lady with only a few well-chosen, well-timed, and perhaps inspired words, and she'd put things all in perspective and gently corrected a whiny little white boy. The timing, the irony, and the humor just seemed to be a perfect example of Proverbs 25:11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. The right choice of words is something beautiful to behold. But also notice the next verse, verse 12, Proverbs 25:12. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, something of great value, is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear. A rebuker brings a word of correction. Often we think of correction in terms of a rod of correction. But there are times when a few wisely chosen words can correct much more powerfully, provided the person being rebuked has an obedient ear. And on this occasion, apparently I did. After being duly humbled, I did introduce myself, and I remember the one lady being a Mrs. Turner. I don't remember the other lady's name, but those words fitly spoken have stuck with me a long time. And the whole encounter with those ladies carried some very valuable lessons, some immediate lessons. For one thing, don't be whiny. Don't be a complaining, whiny white boy. Don't be flippant. Do you like the, what is that, what's the word there? Where's the English teacher? Oh, alliteration, right? Whiny white boy? Yeah, okay. Don't be flippant with your words. Use your words wisely. Avoid a self-centered perspective. Those were kind of the immediate lessons there. Yeah, the self-centered perspective. If you think you're in a bad situation, always consider the plight of others who've experienced things far worse than you ever have. Learn to be content in whatever situation you find yourself in. Philippians 4:11. I'm not turning there, though. I think back, and here I was in a developing country at that time, enjoying opportunities and abundance at a level that the local people there could only dream of. Yet I complained about being at the back of a line for a meal where I could eat as much as I wanted of the best food that the country had to offer. The people at the hotel were treating us like first-class visiting dignitaries. And then I make a flippant comment that minimizes real second-class treatment and inconveniences that were suffered by black people in our country at one time. I was the grumbling, whiny Israelite, and maybe at times I still am. But instead of complaining, I could have been redeeming the time, could have been fellowshipping, could have been conversing with a couple of wise and very witty elderly senior citizens. I should have been asking about their lives, where they were from, and learning from them and their experiences. But aside from the immediate personal lesson of not being a complainer, I also came to better understand the power of words and how they are spoken. The power of words and how they are spoken. So for the remainder of my message today, I want to consider how to increase the odds that our words are more fitly spoken. How can we ensure that we use words that are more fitly spoken? And I'll present 6 points to consider. Number one, appreciate the power of words. Simply appreciate the power of words. I'm going to refer to Proverbs 18:21 because, yes, words have power and we should use them carefully. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. We can greatly encourage and lift people up, or we can greatly discourage and break people down with our words. I didn't even finish the verse here. And those who love it will eat its fruit. Anybody ever heard the expression? I can't remember who said it, but let your words be sweet and tender, for someday you may have to eat them. I always thought that was good. We could also notice Matthew 12:36, because we need to think before we speak. We need to be careful about speaking frivolous, idle words. In Matthew 12:36, Jesus says, "But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give an account. They will give an account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned," or at least embarrassed. Wisely chosen words, delivered at the right time, with empathy and the right attitude, and perhaps a little ironic humor, can have a very powerful and long-lasting effect. Number two, use a proper tone. Use a proper tone when speaking. Proverbs 15 comes to mind here. Familiar passage for many of you. Proverbs 15, the tone in which words are spoken is extremely important. The substance of what we say might be great, might be tremendous, but if we use a bad tone, it can be all for naught. We have to be careful with our emotions when delivering our words. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. A person provoked by anger rarely responds well. As Mrs. Turner listened to me complain, she was probably thinking, "Little white boy, you have no idea of what real suffering is. Some people have gone through." I mean, she could have been harsh. She was probably tempted to give me a lecture and a scolding, but she didn't. Instead, it was simply a few choice words fitly spoken, delivered not with anger, but delivered calmly, with patience, and what seemed to be inspired humor. She showed some empathy, and it was effective. Number three, ooh, here's some more alliteration. Don't waste words whining. Don't waste words whining. I'll refer to Proverbs 18 again, but this time Proverbs 18:2. Yeah, don't be a whiner. Whining words are never fitting, because whiners and complainers can come across as self-centered, with little desire to understand the plight of other people. Proverbs 18, verse 2. Proverbs 18, 2. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart, his own concerns. He's oblivious to the concerns and understanding the concerns of others. There are a lot of ways in which we can waste our words, and whining about ourselves is only one of them. To avoid some of the others, like gossip, the Bible says an awful lot about gossip and has a lot of scriptures there. I'm not going to turn to them. But we can employ point number 4. Use the TKN rule. TKN. A number of years ago, Ben Light gave a sermon mentioning this principle. We need to ask ourselves, is what we're about to say true, kind, and necessary? T, is it true? Is what we're about to say, is it accurate? Is it honest? K, is what we're about to say kind? And is it delivered with empathy and respect for other people, the other person we're talking to? N, is it necessary? Does what we are saying add actual value to the conversation? Is it helpful? Or are we just making noise? Again, the TKN rule helps us to avoid gossip. It reminds us that our words should stir up love and good works. Quoting from Hebrews there. Number 5, ask God to guide and even inspire our words. And we'll refer to Psalm 19:14. We need to pray that God blesses us with the right words at the right time, and that he would approve of them, that they would be acceptable to him. Notice David's prayer, Psalm 19:14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Pray for God's Spirit when we speak. Number 6, lastly here, be a good-hearted person. Be a good-hearted person. We'll go back to Matthew 12, but this time to verse 33. This is probably the most important factor in making our words fitly spoken. Develop a good heart. In Matthew 12:33, Jesus is answering accusations brought by the Pharisees. But he says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, speaking to the Pharisees, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. Good words, words fitly spoken, come from good-hearted people. Good-hearted people like Mrs. Turner. Brethren, my experience with Mrs. Turner those many years ago shows that just a few words spoken with empathy by a good-hearted person can have a powerful, positive, long-lasting effect. The right words at the right time with the right tone can inspire, they can motivate, they can educate, and even rebuke when necessary. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver.